trying to do a series on Prahlad Maharaj's dialogue with the so-called Python Man in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 13, Behavior of a Perfect Person. Some of these I've done in Wellington, so I'll continue here. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 25. Yadichchaya lokam imam prapita karmabhir brahman sargapravargayor dvaram tirascham puna asyacha. Translation. This is the Python Man speaking to Prahlad Maharaj. In the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruitive activities due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life, which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. Purport. It's a very long purport. Read it part by part. All living entities within this material world are undergoing the cycle of birth and death according to the laws of nature. This struggle of birth and death in different species may be called the evolutionary process, but in the Western world it has been wrongly explained. Darwin's theory of evolution from animal to man is incomplete because the theory does not present the reverse condition, namely evolution from man to animal. In this verse, however, evolution has been very well explained on the strength of Vedic authority. Human life, which is obtained in the course of the evolutionary process, is a chance for elevation, swagapavarga, or for degradation, chinascham puna asyacha. If one uses this human form of life properly, he can elevate himself to the higher planetary systems, where material happiness is many thousands of times better than on this planet. Or one may cultivate knowledge by which to become free from the evolutionary process and be reinstated in one's original spiritual life. This is called upavarga, or liberation. Material life is called pavarga because here we are subject to five different states of suffering, represented by the letters pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. Pa means parishrama, very hard labor. Pa means pena, or foam from the mouth. For example, sometimes you see a horse foaming at the mouth with heavy labor. Va means vyartata, disappointment. In spite of so much hard labor, at the end we find disappointment. Pa means bhaya, or fear. In material life, one is always in the blazing fire of fear, since no one knows what will happen next. Finally, ma means mrityu, or death. When one attempts to nullify these five different statuses of life, pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma, one achieves apavarga, or liberation from the punishment of material existence. Om ajnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshun militanena tasmay shri gurave namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Translation again. In the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruitive activities due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life, which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. I would like that devotees come to grips with their situation within material existence. It is very necessary to make spiritual progress in a lasting way that you actually understand what's happening to you down here on the ground. We have our sights on the spiritual world, but that includes being cognizant of your situation where you are now in the material world. In this way, by combining the vision of the spiritual perfection with the vision of the present material reality, you can actually have a wholesome spiritual life, and all the dynamics will be present for you to make spiritual progress. You have to have a solid understanding of where you're at and a solid understanding of where you're going. Now, the problem is that most people can't come to grips with where they're at right now, and therefore they're not interested in the spiritual destination. You may sympathize with these people by looking at yourself. How much are you really coming to grips with your situation in material nature? Just like I stated here, all living entities within this material world are undergoing the cycle of birth and death according to the laws of nature. Now, I wonder, when reading this, how many of you actually feel like you're undergoing a cycle? Are these just words to you? How many of you look at nature and look at yourself within nature and realize you are undergoing a cycle? The cycle is having you. It's chewing you up in terms of your material identity. We all are familiar with the obvious cycles of life. You're a little tot, and then you become an older kid, then a teenager, then an adult, then a middle-aged adult, then an old adult. Everyone's familiar with that cycle. But that's not the actual major cycle that you're undergoing. The major cycle you're undergoing is repeated birth and death. But you've got to feel that in your bones, so to speak. You've got to feel the power of repetition. Just like if I say, Hare. I say it again, Hare. Hare. You feel the repetition. But do you feel the repetition of your life in terms of the cycle of birth and death? This is the problem. Often we may just let these words go in one ear and out the other ear. But unless you come to grips with your situation under the three modes of material nature and understand how you're trapped, how you're entangled, how you're victimized, you're not going to be able to make lasting spiritual progress. In other words, a devotee is always applying his or her intelligence through the shastra to understand what's going on. You can't do that if you're taking as your number one source of evidence and authority your own senses. But this is what current society is pushing on you so vigorously. This is the pressure you feel. Your senses are the authority. How do you feel now? Make a decision based on that. Are you having a good feeling at this moment? Great. That's the standard. Or, if you're a little bit broad-minded, a Mahatma, then, how would you like to feel 5 years from now? That's about the limit. 5 years from now, what's your 5-year plan for your own happiness? Who can think of their whole life as a mere moment within the vast cycle of repeated birth and death? You don't get a glimpse of that grand symphony unless you hear from Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and assimilate those lessons, and then you go on to Bhagavatam. Feel yourself undergoing a cycle. This is not just some kind of abstract talk. This is the reality. You can feel so many things in this world. You can feel yourself moving through traffic. You can feel yourself moving from one house to another. You can feel yourself moving from one mode of transport to another mode of transport. But can you feel yourself moving in the cycle of repeated birth and death? We should pray to Krishna to let the Bhagavad Gita come alive in us so we can feel that and then present that feeling to others. Otherwise, what are the feelings that are predominant in our life? Our temporary desires. And our temporary desires well up in a situation of imaginary permanence. Do you notice? That's what happens when you start dreaming of sense gratification. In order to dream properly of sense gratification, you have to feel like you're going to be around for a while in order for the dream to be intact. Just catch yourself doing that. Yes, nice sense gratification. As soon as you say nice sense gratification, immediately the mind has to conjure up a feeling of permanence, safety, and security. All the things that the material world promises and never delivers. But it's necessary for you to dream like that in order to have that vision of sense gratification. Things are going to be nice. Yes. Like the whole world's going to grind to a halt while you gratify your senses. This is the symphony that Maya places in your mind. We're speaking at the Loft Tuesday night. Very nice crowd. I never saw such a nice gathering of persons, whether Wellington Christ Church or that was the best group I'd ever seen. So I was asking them to consider their desires, to meditate on their desires, and then feel safe to have whatever they want. What is that feeling like? To feel safe. Yes. I can have this desire and I'm safe. It's going to all happen. They really got into it. They closed their eyes. Then I told them, sorry, but that safety is not here. It's not going to happen. But you see, in our kind of schizophrenic material existence, we imagine such a thing as safe sense gratification in a most unsafe world. This is the craziness. It's madness. You have to catch yourself hallucinating in this way. Safe sense gratification. The whole world will just come to a halt. We'll have a special dimension where just everything goes on nicely. It'll be like this and like that. But wait a minute. Nah. It doesn't happen like that. There's going to be problems. It's not going to work. I'll be frustrated. I'll be disappointed. There'll be letdowns. And then the truth hits you. I can't be happy in this incompatible atmosphere. I was trying to make that point to our guests. You're in an incompatible situation, like a fish on dry land. Your spirit soul, but you're trying to be happy within the clutches of material nature. It's not going to work. There's going to be no safety, no wholesome fulfillment like you imagine. It's going to be a rough ride. So, we can break out of this illusion just by meditating on these words in the Shastra. Taking Prabhupada's presentation very seriously, he's presenting concepts. And they're often repeated so that they gradually sink into your consciousness. Just like this concept of undergoing the cycle of birth and death. So you feel yourself doing that. Start to wear the shoes and walk in them. And then you'll begin to see what's going on. Undergoing the cycle of birth and death according to the laws of nature. Not your laws. Not according to your whims. Not according to your desires, not according to your plans, according to the laws of material nature. But who feels that way? Those of you who do Sankirtan, you know. People
They don't think like this. They're just cavorting around, walking around, pushing on their life as if the whole universe has just come to a halt and is letting everything happen their way. No, it doesn't work like that. The universe is going on. When you say the universe is going on, life is going on, what you really mean is that the laws of nature are going on and you're subjugated. You have to have a feel for this. I know sometimes devotees make the mistake of thinking, oh, we've heard this before, it's Bhagavad Gita. Can we hear something new, something esoteric? Yes, we're interested in hearing of the glories of the spiritual world, but we won't get there unless we have a firm understanding of the nefarious activities of material existence. So both are side by side. As stated in the Isha Upanishad, so you should cultivate the science of knowledge and understanding nescience side by side. Now, what about this evolutionary process? Briefly, Prabhupada makes reference in the purport to the Darwinian conception of evolution, in that the human body has come about through changes in other forms, monkeys, apes, human beings, like that. Now, basically Prabhupada is just saying in a backhanded way, even if you want to believe that, what about the reverse process of going from a human being backwards? No one talks about that. And of course, look, when you look at the evolutionary theory as a whole, there's no question of this species transforming into that species. The bodies are the same, but the consciousness changes. When we say the bodies remain the same, the species remain the same, we're meaning basically. There can be always some minor modifications. But the species are the same, but the consciousness of living entity changes. So according to the change in the consciousness, you get a certain body. Now, as you know, you progress through the lower forms according to the laws of nature. You don't get karma until you become a human being. The human life is a junction. Which way are you going to go? As the Python Man is saying here, this human form of life that I've received can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. So he's speaking four options. The junction can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. That means the intelligent person is destination conscious. You've got to know where your life is going to. You don't just drive around in Auckland, for example, without knowing where you're going. How many of you do that? You just jump in a car and let's just drive around and we don't know where we'll wind up. No. You've got a destination fixed in mind. Just like when Dayavir was taking me to the loft from here. He inquired, what's the quickest way to get there, to the destination? And so the yatras told him, Mount Eden Road doesn't have lights, you go up there, that's better. So, this is the proper consciousness for your whole life. Where's your life going? Don't just think, well, right now I feel like I want to do this, and in 5 years I think I'll want to feel like that, and then, I don't know, I guess you get older, and then you die, and you leave it at that. You have to have your future firmly in mind. What's the main point of having your future firmly in mind? So you can prepare. Where is that institution, where is that culture that prepares persons for their next life? Prepares them for making the right choice at the junction. Just like if you're driving on a well-designed highway, I don't know if the motorways in New Zealand are like that, they're not that long, so it may not be necessary, but in countries where they're very long motorways, you're always warned that a junction is coming up ahead. It's not that as soon as you get to the junction, boom, four choices. Which one are you going to take? In England's like that, you're warned. Yes, well, junction coming up ahead. There'll be several choices. So you can be in the right lane to make your, to exit or whatever. So that's the way intelligent life is lived. Know it's coming, your junction, and make your choice. And you have to feel that. You've got to emotionally identify with this reality. Preparation of choice, destination. What's wrong with preparing? Everyone prepares in material life. You prepare for the job market by going to school. I want a certain kind of job, so I'll take that training now, prepare my future. Those heading to household life, they prepare for marriage, they court, they associate, they get to try to understand each other's positive and negative points, they talk about what the future's going to be, do our plans match up, so they're preparing. Where is the preparation for the greatest event? Changing bodies. And you notice how our mind doesn't think like that? Can you catch yourself? Your mind actually doesn't feel the emotional impact of that choice, of that upcoming junction, and how you have to prepare. This is how strong Maya is. If the material energy forces you to focus on small change and forget the big bills, that's what goes on. Try and see how day after day this happens to you. There's a powerful energy that just blocks your thinking about the main issues in life, the big bills, and just gets you to focus your attention on a handful of small change, 5 cent coins. They still have these in New Zealand, fives and tens. Suppose you're on Sankirtan and someone hands you a few of these coins, fives and tens. Sorry. Who is it was telling me? Well, I think it was Goku Leela in Wellington was telling me when someone does like that to her, she says, green is a very popular color these days. The 20 note is green, so green is a very popular color these days. Other people, when they get there. So, why is it that we take so seriously the small change stuff? Even people have this expression, don't sweat the small stuff. But they all are. They have no perspective to understand what are the tiny issues, what is the major issue. There's no institution teaching them that. And there's such a powerful energy that's making it impossible for people to focus properly. Krishna tells you what's going on. He's not leaving you to be shafted without information. He says, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mamamaya Dravya. There's a material energy working on you that's so powerful, you're not going to be able to see your way through it. But ma mevye papadyante maya metam tarantite. If you surrender to me, you'll be able to get through this. You'll be able to penetrate this dense fog. Otherwise, no. So watch how your life is squandered. Watch how this energy seeks to squander your life. If you can know what's going on, then you're half the way to victory. Don't have this innocent, naive feeling. Can we open another window? Innocent, naive feeling that you're going to have a fair chance in life. I think a lot of, even our devotees, they have this sentiment that life is going to give me a fair go. Yes, some of you, if you like that. Life's going to give me a fair go. There'll be good times, there'll be bad times, but I'll have a fair chance. No. The deck is stacked against you. It's all a rip-off, one way or another. So the question is, how are you going to be ripped off? That's the central question of material existence. How are you going to be ripped off? Which way? That's how things work. But many people, in their sense, become offended by hearing this. Yeah. How can you talk about life like that? How can you talk about my life like that? In Wellington, we had one visitor, new to Krishna consciousness. She came to Wellington for a few days from Auckland. And before she left, she told me, in a feisty mood of rebellion, which we're accustomed to, so I can't, what is this about? We're in a disease condition. Why do we have to think like that? What is this about illusion, disease, condition, distortion? I don't feel that way. So here again you see the training, the conditioning. My senses don't feel that way. My senses aren't telling me that. So therefore, it can't be true. My senses are telling me that life will be good and most of my desires will be fulfilled. Because I have a warm feeling in my heart, material nature is going to reciprocate with me. I don't know how much we can actually grasp that so much of our problems are based simply on making our senses the authority. So you can say to such a person, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, anityam asukam lokam, this is a temporary miserable world. And they'll respond, but my senses don't feel that way. My senses are telling me that this is a nice place that's going to do nice things for me. My senses are telling me that I have all the knowledge and expertise for crossing the ocean of material existence, just as I am. Now, an experienced devotee can see this person is just setting herself up for problems. This is the tragedy of Maya. You have to inflate yourself first. I have abilities. I'm a nice person. Everyone tells me so. My personality is kind of unique. Actually, I'm kind of intelligent in my own way. I have skills to offer to the world. And so, naturally, I expect the world's going to do something for me. So let's get it on. Let's let the action happen. So you set sail on the sea of material existence with that kind of inflated attitude about yourself and inflated expectations. And then, of course, you head right into a storm. When our guests came Tuesday, I was going through an analysis of the teenage years. I asked them, how many of you felt like this? When you're a teenager, when you're just starting your teenage years, that is, you have so many expectations. And then when you end your teenage years, in terms of having money, a little bit of money to travel or get your own flat, choose your own friends, live with who you want to, it seems like a whole new world is opening up to you. You can do it. No longer are you under your parents' thumb. Of course, the parents' thumb is pretty non-existent these days. Still, when you get some money, when you're old enough to be on the dole, what age is that? 18 now, not 17, it's 18?
It's 18 unless you have special conditions.
Unless you have special conditions, which means what? You don't like your parents, or?
Yeah, you don't like your parents, or a partner who's older,
Oh, I see. So, that was New Zealand. So, you're 17 or 18, you've got money, either from the dole or from a job, or you're playing the university game and you're getting money in that way, or some, you know, big loans, going to polytech, enslaving your life through big loans for education that's going to guarantee you a high-paying job. So, you have this feeling that, oh, the whole world is opening up for me. Choice, freedom, independence. And then, after a few years, reality hits you. that you can't get most of what you want, and even when you do get what you want, it doesn't satisfy you. So we had a room full of persons in their late 20s. I asked them, how many of you felt like that when you were younger and just starting out in the world? You had that sense of, wow, choice, the ecstasy of choice. I can choose. Where will I travel? Who will I live with? Who will I spend the weekend with this weekend? Wow. They all raised their hand. Yes, we all felt like that. I said, how many feel like that now? No one raised their hand. They all said, nah, it's not the way it is. You got to pay a price for everything. Sooner or later you realize it's a struggle. They all said that. So what is this illusion, this cloud of illusion that descends and just baffles everyone? Now, the amazing thing is, they thought that they were beyond the illusion because they had passed through that stage. They had had heaps of partners. They had traveled overseas. They had worked this job, that job, flatted with this one, flatted with that one. So they thought, yeah, we've been through the idealistic phase. We understand that life is not easy. You just got to do what you got to do to get over. But obviously, they're still in the thick of the illusion. They can't properly think about what is their ultimate benefit. It's very difficult to see that. They think they're being pragmatic now. They're in their late 20s. They're being pragmatic and realistic. Yeah, there's going to be difficulties. There's going to be lack of satisfaction. But make the proper decisions to get as much as you can get. Well, it's not going to be everything. You're not going to find complete love, but try to find some love. Your relationship is not going to be 100% rapture, but if it's 40%, you know, that'll do. At least for 2 years. They all agree, yeah. Yeah. Make a 2-year plan for your relationships. If it looks like it's going to be a good time for 2 years, take on the relationship. Don't expect more than that. They all said that very exactly. Yeah. 2 years. If it looks like you're going to click with somebody for 2 years, it's a good thing. Be practical. So, they thought that they were now world-wise, savvy, as compared to a bright-eyed teenager who just, wow, I'm getting my flat, my own flat. I'm going to live with my friends, my own flat. I'm going to live with my boyfriend or my girlfriend in our own flat instead of shacking up at home with the parents, you know. I want to travel overseas. The UK, to Thailand. They all were past that phase. And they thought, you know, we're wise now. They don't see that their power to make major decisions about their life has been destroyed. Destroyed by their youthful activities. They can't think straight. They don't see that. They think, yeah, we've been through it. We came out the other side. We're practical about life. We don't have huge expectations. You just try to have a good time from moment to moment and make sure it's not too expensive. That was what they were thinking. Now, unless they meet a devotee of Lord Krishna who can impart to them the overall scene, what's going on, they'll never be able to grasp it. I'm undergoing the cycle of birth and death. Human life is a junction. I could go back into the animal species. Now, I want you to catch yourself thinking about going back into the animal species. You don't remember becoming a human being. Therefore, you think there's safety in ignorance. You don't remember your birth. You don't remember your previous death. You don't remember rotating from species to species on different planets. You don't remember any of that. And therefore, there's a false sense of security. But catch it. It's all based on forgetfulness. Because I don't remember, therefore I'm safe. Once again, this is trusting your senses as the ultimate judge. Hey, guess what, everybody? We don't remember any past life as a dog or a cat or an elephant. Do you remember? Nah, I don't remember. Okay. On with the party. Catch this. The very fundamental point, very important. making your senses the ultimate authority. I see this creeping in to devotees also as they spend a few years in Krishna consciousness. They come fried on material life or curious about spiritual things. And after a few years, unconsciously, they start making their senses once again the ultimate judge. I think I want to feel like such and such. And I think I want to feel this. And what my senses are telling me is, of course, devotees don't talk like that, but suddenly they start to become influenced once again by this conditioned propensity to make your sensory inputs the ultimate authority and not the shastra. Therefore, repeated hearing is required. Maybe some of you have been around in Krishna consciousness long enough to notice that as soon as you stop hearing these things, you become covered over. In other words, to actually be a serious devotee, you have to keep your sword sharp. You can't let the blade of your sword become dull. That sword for cutting through illusion has to always be sharp. And without a daily hearing process, it's very difficult. And spiritual life becomes very precarious. Because the illusion that envelops us in Kali Yuga is so intense. Those of you who do book distribution, you know that. Illusion is all powerful. Yet, if there's connection to Krishna, then you can make your way through this dense cloud. It is possible. But you have to keep your sword sharp. That sword for cutting the knot of material existence. By repeated hearing, you immunize yourself. And you have to feel what you read. How am I undergoing the cycle of birth and death? What does it feel like to change bodies? Another interesting concept that the Bhagavatam gives for you to meditate upon and to consider is that what you're doing in the cycle of repeated birth and death, the evolutionary process where the soul evolves through various levels of material bodies, what you're actually doing is tasting different bodies. Try to see it that way. You know how to taste food. But what about tasting bodies? Mm-hmm. That's actually what material nature is arranging for you. Taste life as a tiger. Taste life as a duck. Taste life. Yes! I was watching the ducks. You can see them. I see out the window. There are the ducks there, behind that little tree. They're white. Imagine a spirit soul taking that kind of body. Imagine that's you. I don't want to be a duck. Why would a spirit soul take a duck's body? Yes, it's forced by the laws of nature, but also, look at it another way. The spirit soul is tasting that body. What's it like to be a duck? Similarly, as a human being, you're tasting this human body. Just like you taste particular kinds of food. Today I will taste dal, tomorrow taste a hot cross bun, next day pizza. Similarly, you taste different types of bodies. So don't become so absorbed in this tasting process that you can't see what's going on. Now, Narottam Das Thakur makes the further point that not only are you tasting different bodies, but in each particular body, your main activity is to taste various forbidden things. Because the tongue is all powerful. The tongue is the most powerful sense, Spaktuno Thakur says. Most difficult to control the tongue. Therefore, within each species that you take, within each bodily existence that you take, your main activity of degradation comes through the tongue. You eat all kinds of nasty things. I used to hear this point by Srila Narottam Das Thakur again and again. He's lamenting in his Vaishnav songs. I was changing bodies, just tasting different kinds of abominable things, and didn't register for quite some time. And then finally, reading it again and again, I started to get the import. The tongue is the most prominent sense. And yes, when you change bodies, you're changing the different types of abominable things for your tongue. I mean, just think about what a duck eats, or what a dog eats, what any creature eats. You have to taste those things. Your tongue is lusty for those things. Now, of course, we all know that when human beings misuse their independence and their valuable human consciousness and use their tongues to taste all kinds of meats and flesh, eggs, fish, this is a great tragedy. But it doesn't stop there. In every species of life that you take, you're going to have to taste forbidden things. So this is the main activity that goes on within a particular body. So first of all, look at the fact that you taste different bodies as a spirit soul. It's a very unique concept, a very fresh way of looking at things. I'm tasting this body. I'm tasting what life is like in this body. And body means senses. Indriyani pranayo, Krishna explains in the Gita. When you talk about body, you're talking about a bag of senses. So you're tasting that body, and within that particular taste of a body, you're tasting various abominable things with your tongue. That is material existence. When you strip away all the veneer, the facades, that's what's going on. Tasting of bodies and then tasting abominable things within a particular body. That's it. But many people rebel. No, no, you're just making everything sound morbid. What about the emotions? What about caring? What about... I mean, what about it? We did a nice exercise on Tuesday. Because we had... It was, you know, kind of young adult audience, persons in their late 20s like that. So I said, next time you're in a relationship and the emotions move you to say those beloved words, those cherished words, you know, instead of saying that, instead of saying to someone, I love you, let's be accurate and say, I desire you. And they're all like, ooh, that's interesting. I said, this puts everything into clear perspective. As soon as you say love, I love you, then there's all sorts of, you know, cover-ups going on about what the real program is. That I want you to satisfy me, and I'm going to satisfy you. And you're going to care for me, and I'm going to care for you. Because we all know what the deal is. If you don't care for me properly, that's it. I'm not caring for you. I'll put up with it for a short time. But if over a period of, what would you say it is these days? 6 months? Mm-hmm. 6 months and you're not caring for me properly, that's it. But meanwhile, I love you and you love me. So I said, why don't we just make things more accurate? Because we were talking about desire. Instead of saying, I love you, just say, I desire you. That makes everything clear. And the other person can say that, I desire you too. And then you see clearly what's going on. And then instead of saying, I don't love you anymore, say, I don't desire you anymore. That makes life very easy, yeah? Can you see yourself, really? You know, I have to tell you something. You may have noticed that we haven't been talking much lately. You may have noticed that I just have a distant look in my eyes. The fact is, I don't desire you anymore. And the other person could say, yeah, well, you know, I was also thinking, you know, I didn't want to be the first one to say it, but I don't desire you either. That is a much better way for how things should go on. So I presented that to our audience. And they thought, yeah, actually, at first they were like a little uncomfortable. You mean you can't say I love you anymore? I said, come on, you guys. You're the ones who just told me that you should have a 2-year expectation for your relationships. They all told me that. And now when I talk about it's inappropriate to say I love you, you start to get a little, you know, edgy and a little uncomfortable. But you told me yourselves, don't expect more than 2 years for a relationship. If you can get to 2 years, it's great. You know, count your blessings. So let's just do away with this. I love you too, and make it I desire you. I desire you too. Instead of, you know, the usual insecure questions. Do you love me? Instead, do you desire me? And then everything is crystal clear. So, we have so much work to do to educate people into the basic reality of life. In his book, Srila Prabhupada has worked so hard to give persons an actual education into what's going on. What is your destination? Why don't you prepare for your destination? You don't do it because it's not considered an important thing in society today. If you call up your parents and they ask you, what are you doing? And you say, I'm preparing for my future destination in my next life. You gone nuts? Think about now. Think about the money you're going to need to make, the bills you're going to need to pay, the family you're going to need to support as you bring into the world more ignorant children to make the situation even worse. Think about that. What is this thinking of the next life, thinking about whether you're going to go to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings? Who cares about that? Or, that's such a long way off. Is it really a long way off? No. But the deluding power of Maya makes you feel, and I want you to concentrate on that, the feelings that Maya gives you, as well as the feelings that Bhagavatam gives you. So the feelings that Maya gives you is that the junction's a long way ahead. Don't worry about it. I'm sure, especially Sankirtan devotees, you know what it's like when you're driving along on the motorway and, you know, no one's been paying attention to the fact they have to get off the motorway at a certain point. No. Oh, the exit is right here! You even try to get into the proper lane to get off the highway. We're supposed to turn! I remember, I think, I was in... Anyway, a trip to the Manchester airport in the UK, and just that happened, you know, like, the driver's mind was preoccupied. I forgot what we were talking about, so the driver's mind just took off, you know, to the stratosphere, and then the junction came, and you know, we were just going to pass it by, so you have to kind of, you know, make a dangerous move to get, you know, to the other side of the road. To, you know that, you know what that feeling is like. Oh, we're gonna miss it. Oh, we're gonna miss our turn. We're gonna miss the junction. We're gonna go past it. Who knows where we're gonna wind up? We have to go through such an ordeal to get back. And why don't we feel that way about our human life? We're going to miss it. We're not ready. We're not properly situated to make the change. No one feels like that. Because there's some kind of energy that just makes you dull about these things. And just consider, how do your senses feel now? Those are the authorities. The only way you can overcome this false sense of authoritativeness is by making Bhagavatam your authority. And then you actually see. It's not blind faith. You're just putting on eyeglasses, and then you notice, I can see clearly now. Of course, there's so many things in Bhagavatam that are beyond your current sense perception, but not all of it. Just like you might say, well, how do we know there's the heavenly planets? Well, even on this earth, you can see different levels of material pleasure. Why do you assume all the other planets are vacant? and don't have that same characteristic of differing standards of pleasure? Just like Narada Muni. He describes, later in this canto, how he was a Gandharva on Gandharva Loka. Now what are you going to say? No? That's mythology? How do you know? You just have to be open-minded in the beginning. You don't know. You can't just say, ah, oh, Gandharva Loka, a planet of Gandharvas. They all are very beautiful. They sing so sweetly. I don't believe that. How can you say that? So Narada Muni, he's giving you his autobiography. He's telling you about himself. He says, I was a beautiful Gandharva. He had a beautiful voice. And he was very, very lusty, very attracted to the opposite sex. The history Narada Muni is giving is from a previous lifetime of Brahma. And Narada Muni is able to remember millions upon millions of years ago. In this current lifetime of Brahma, Narada Muni has taken, he's taken birth as one of Brahma's sons. But he's talking about a previous Mahakalpa. Kalpa is a day of Brahma, Mahakalpa is lifetime of Brahma. So I was Upabarhana, a playboy in Gandharva Loka. I could sing, I was beautiful, all the ladies loved me. So he would always wander here and there, surrounded by packs of young girls. Yeah. He's wearing flower garlands and sandalwood pulp all the time. Just life was a lark in Gandharva Loka. And so, the Prajapatis, the forefathers of the cosmos, they had decided they were going to have a Sankirtan festival. Now, Sankirtan means glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upabarhana decided to attend the Sankirtan festival, surrounded by his hordes of admirers. He whimsically and foolishly began to sing songs glorifying the demigods at a Sankirtan festival. Sankirtan meaning glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Upabarhana was just so caught up in the adoration given by these surrounding ladies. And he was so infatuated by his own beauty, his own sweet voice, that he just did that whimsically. And as a result, the Prajapatis cursed him. You will take birth as a Sudra in your next life. So you pick up Narada Muni's birth as a Sudra in the first canto of Bhagavatam, where he describes how he was son of a maidservant. You don't see any mention of his father. That's low class life, when there's no restriction between male and female association. You have low class life, and this is what's going on today. It's not civilization. All you have to do is look at the patterns of male-female association, and you can tell, is there civilization or not? You don't look at the technology, you don't look at the political or economic complications, just look at the patterns of male-female interaction, then you judge whether there's civilization or not. We'll be talking about that more in the next verse, just to give you a prelude coming, what's coming. In this human form of life, a man and woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activity. That's next. But for now, we're trying to cope with this cycle of repeated birth and death and the real way that evolution happens. And the fact that we have a choice. What's the junction? Where's the junction going to take us? How do you keep these things in mind? And as I said, please notice that there's an energy that wants to push these things out of your mind. That's what you're feeling every day. That's Maya. Push these thoughts out of your mind and just focus on how do your senses feel? What are your senses telling you? What are your senses telling that would be good for you? So there's so much pressure on you. Take shelter of your senses. Consult your senses. And then you can talk to billions of people who will assure you that's the right thing. Yes, yes. And they'll give you their story about how they're doing the same thing. Particularly, you notice family gatherings, gatherings of old friends. This discussion is always about what are your senses telling you. This is what my senses have told me. This is what my senses tell me the future should be. And then you discuss past sensory experiences. And you're temporarily happy if some of your sensory experiences seem to work out. So you commiserate in terms of your failures, and you rejoice together in terms of your sensory successes, and that's life. Meanwhile, nature is doing its thing, but no one cares. Nature is swallowing everyone up with this cycle of repeated birth and death. So let's read on. The word tirascham refers to degraded life. Human life, of course, provides an opportunity for the best living conditions. As Western people think, from the monkeys come the human beings who are more comfortably situated. However, if one does not utilize his human life for swarga or apavarga, he again falls to the degraded life of animals like dogs and hogs. Therefore, a sane human being must consider whether he will elevate himself to the higher planets, prepare to free himself from the evolutionary process, or travel again through the evolutionary process in higher and lower grades of life. If one works piously, one may be elevated back to Godhead. If one works piously, one may be elevated to the higher planetary systems or achieve liberation and return home back to Godhead. But otherwise, one may be degraded to a life as a dog, a hog, and so on. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrita Devan, those interested in being elevated to the higher planetary systems, Devaloka or Swargaloka, must prepare to do so. Similarly, if one wants liberation and wants to return home back to Godhead, he should prepare himself for that purpose. Now, I wonder, how many of you actually feel a strong need to prepare yourself for your true goal in life? You've got to feel this in your heart. Not just be kind of mindless and spacey. Yeah, it sounds good, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah, I like this Krishna consciousness. It kind of really makes sense, you know. Especially right now, and you know, I don't really know what to do with myself, and I was kind of bewildered as a teenager. And, you know, I just don't have anything really going on for me in material life, so I figured I'd try Krishna consciousness. Yeah, it seems to make sense, yeah. Yeah, Prabhu, yeah. You notice when people want to prepare for some material goal, how they really get into it, and there's a sense of assurance. I'm studying to prepare for my future as such and such. Or, we're engaged to be married. We're preparing for our future together. Immediately. But because I'm preparing for going back to Godhead. What? Where is that at? I mean, what's that do for you? Actually, such people, this is what you can say. You are preparing to die and you have no idea what comes next. You're preparing to do that. You should get people to admit that. Yes, I'm preparing to die and I have no idea what my future is. I'm preparing to do that. You've got to get them emotionally into these concepts. That's the job of those who are leading discussion groups, seminar groups. It's the job of those who are preaching, cultivating, doing sannyasa. You want the people to emotionally identify with these realities that the Bhagavatam is presenting. Not that it's just in one ear and out the other, like some catechism or, you know, some kind of religious beliefs. If you yourself make that mistake of taking this all as a religious belief, how will you be able to correct that mistake in others? So you've got to produce some emotional identification, first in yourself and then in others. Feel that preparation. I'm preparing to go back to Godhead. So what do I have to do? You've got X amount of years. What are you going to do in that time? The junction is coming. Which way will you go? So Prabhupada continues. Our Krishna conscious movement is therefore the highest movement from the benediction of human society, because this movement is teaching people how to go back home, back to Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that different forms of life are obtained by association with the three modes of material nature. Karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. According to one's association with the material qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance in this life, in one's next life, one receives an appropriate body. Now, immediately, I know some of you will think, oh, we've heard this before. We're studying the Gita and Bhakti Shastri. It's nothing new. But have you emotionally identified with this? It's got to descend into your heart from your head. Modern civilization does not know that because of varied association in material nature, the living entity, although eternal, is placed in different disease conditions known as the many species of life. Such a unique way of looking at things. When you're walking throughout the city, the country, and you see the birds, the trees, the humans, the cats, the dogs, do you think these so-called different species are actually different disease conditions? It's going to be hard for you to think like that because of so much New Age propaganda, which unconsciously affects even our devotees. What do you mean life's disease? It's getting hard for devotees to think like this. Therefore, unconsciously, many devotees, they don't read Bhagavad Gita because it's just not the book that you want to read when you're consciously or unconsciously affected by these New Age notions. Life is beautiful. You just get in touch with the different energies and open up your chakras. And this has affected a lot of devotees subconsciously. Now, to be able to look at reality starkly, effectively, it takes some inner strength. To be able to walk around and just see the different species and say, these are different disease conditions of life. You're not going to find much support in society for your thinking like that. The only support you're going to find is among strong devotees. Just like this guest who came from Auckland to Wellington for a few days before leaving the country. She objected to this. What do you mean? We're in a disease condition of life. You know, she really took offense. She, I'm not in a disease condition of life. I'm me. I'm young. I'm pretty. I'm smart. And you're telling me I'm in a disease condition of life? I don't know about this Krishna consciousness. Of course, many of us may have felt like that in the beginning. Something in our hearts told us, you're wrong. There's something not working in your life. There's something quite not right. There's an incompatibility. You know it. Admit it. Those moments do come because the super soul is in the heart. The super soul, Paramatma, is always trying to get the living entity to turn his or her head in the right direction. So those moments do come. And then if people have access to these books, they'll consult them and they'll find the support they need for being sane. Indeed, different disease conditions known as the many species of life. Where else are you going to find this kind of knowledge? Because Prabhupada says it so plainly in simple English, you may just pass it by. English is not his first, was not his first language. So, everything is stated simply. But the thoughts are so deep and profound. They're revolutionary. Let's continue. Modern civilization is unaware of the laws of nature. So you ask yourself, how am I living? What are my expectations? I'm unaware of the laws of material nature. You tell yourself these things and see how it is so. Prakate kriyamanani gunani karmani sarvasa ahankara vimutatma kataha miti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the performer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Every living entity is under the full control of the stringent laws of material nature. Can you feel that? You're under the full control of the stringent laws of material nature. Sounds severe, doesn't it? Sounds severe. What do you think, Milton? I'm under the full control of the stringent laws of material nature. And Milton, I've got ideas, I've got fancies, I've got caprices, whims, I've got... I'm a nice guy, everyone knows. Isn't there something that just fights back like that? What do you think, Benedict? Can you really... fully under the control of the stringent laws of material nature. Can you feel it in your heart? Yeah. Because there's that contamination of just fancy free. Life will have a good feeling for my heart. There'll be opportunity for my senses to feel things. This is a disease condition. But we don't want to accept that it's disease. Well, this is the battle. And you can't win in this battle as long as you make your senses the authorities. Again and again I'm seeing in Krishna consciousness, after over 3 decades, again and again things come down to what is the authority for your decision, your senses or the Shastra? It comes down to that again and again and again. As soon as you make your senses the authority, they tell you so many things. This is nice. This is okay. This is going to be relieving. This is going to be satisfying. And as soon as you make the Shastra your authority, you can see clearly through this whole illusion. Every living entity is under the full control of the stringent laws of material nature. But rascals think themselves independent. Actually, however, they cannot be independent. This is foolishness. A foolish civilization is extremely risky. And therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to make people aware of their fully dependent condition under the stringent laws of nature. And is trying to save them from being victimized by strong Maya, which is Krishna's external energy. Behind the material laws is the supreme controller, Krishna. Mayajakshena prakriti, suyache sacharatra. Therefore, if one surrenders unto Krishna, mamevye prapajyante, mayametam juantite, one may immediately be freed from the control of material nature, external nature. Sagunam samati jaitam, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. This should be the aim of life. So I hope you can see that this is hard work, in a sense, coping with these points, both for yourself and then delivering them to others. This is hard work because there's something militating against this acceptance. There's something pushing, no, 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 not that. You should feel that resistance. No, no. It's our conditioned nature. My senses want to feel good. I want to be independent. I'll do it my way. No, no. I've got creative potential. I've got opportunity. What is this talk about fully under the control of the stringent laws of theology? It takes a lot of investing your heart's energy, your mind's energy to come to grips with these points. I've noticed that over the decades. It really takes a lot of... You just have to face things squarely. How is this so? Do I really accept this? Why is this true? Don't accept blindly. Think about it. Me? How am I fully under the control of the laws of nature? Do I feel like that? Then this knowledge will start to sink deep into your heart when you consider it deeply in that way. But then we get to our final point. Who has the time to do that? You live in a society which prevents people from having the necessary time to focus on these points. That is a problem. All right. Any questions? So I'm trying to teach you how to take these books into your heart. Take them through your intelligence into the heart, into the core of your existence. Then you'll come alive, and you can teach others how to do that. These points require deep contemplation. As I said, society doesn't give people the time for that. You are obligated as devotees to give yourself the time for that. You can't blame anyone if you don't take that time. Prepare for your future and teach others how to prepare. Don't be in anxiety, worrying, you know, this is all kind of new, it's all kind of different. You know, the Bhagavatam is kind of, you know, it's interesting, but, you know, it's so different. You will make progress. These things will become known to you if you endeavor in the right way. And then you'll be the wisest person, and you'll be able to give the greatest benefit to humanity. If you care for yourself, and if you truly care for others. It does require you to work at it, though. All right. We'll leave you all in deep thought. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.